not. Girl, pull it out.
It was worth it.
Yeah.
I can think so.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna have a. Everyone was concerned only about the parking. You know, like when we come to the parking lot.
They're putting the parking lot in like that green space. Yeah.
Lost houses, chicks.
But I heard it's gonna be like they're gonna have like 24-hour security around the parking lot and the park itself. So.
Do we have energy for more? Yeah. I know it's hot, and I may do a few different things because I know a lot of things that has been said or have been thoughts of mine, but what I got to share is coming from my own lived experience here in the neighborhood. I've lived here all my adult life since I got out of college, so I've really seen the neighborhood go through all kinds of transitions, so it's my lived experience. And my perspective on how things worked in this world was challenged by living and working alongside neighbors and people in this community. And I know that I connected with this struggle here because of my own working class background. What I saw and witnessed awakened me to structural issues, which I didn't really have a lot of awareness of, even being from a working class family, that kept people poor. And I wanted to be part of making things better. Because when you see people being exploited or suffering injustices, it just moved you, you know, to action. And I hooked into this neighborhood's struggle that was fighting a history of resistance and struggle over the years. By the time I got here in the early 70s, our population was 15,500. 40% of us were black and 60% of us was white. And as some people mentioned, that has really changed over time. And our neighborhood at that point was primarily Appalachian and African American people. I had culture. Many young children and elderly people on fixed incomes. 99% of us were renters living in substandard housing. We were a neighborhood of displaced people. From the mountains, Appalachian Mountains, the Deep South. And then in the late 50s, 60s is when a lot of African American families were literally forced out of the West End when Interstate 75 came through. And that was when our neighborhood really started becoming more integrated in terms of African American. Like in 1960s, this neighborhood was only 10% African American. You know, by the 80s, we were 60%. African American, and obviously through the 90s, you know, we were more than that. In my entire time here, there has been a land and a housing struggle just by the very fact of our location. We're less than a square mile, we're just north of the downtown business district, sandwiched between two highways, 71 and 75, and then south of Pill Hill or UC, what people call it. So it's really a small area. And we lived in buildings owned by absentee landlords then. I mean, my first few apartments, the owner lived next door. In one of my apartments, the owner lived in the same building. But that was really few and far between. The neighborhood was owned by absentee landlords putting very little money into maintenance. So that's why we were living in such substandard conditions. And there was already, by the time I got here, disinvestment going on. But also a history of people wanting to take control of our lives. If there's one point that I want to make tonight, it's that this neighborhood, our people have not been sitting on our laurels suffering poverty. We wanted to become actors in the making of our own history. So as long as I've been here, and I know from stories that I've heard from my neighbors previously, people have done a lot of things to fight for basic human rights. So our organizing efforts in the early years, we challenged landlords because a lot of us were living in substandard condition. We had tenant strikes. We helped create the tenant landlord law in this city. We strengthened the relocation benefits because there was not very good relocation benefits when people were kicked out of housing. And because of the fight of African-American people through the civil rights movement, their demand was federal dollars, bring it into the urban core neighborhoods so people could live decently. So my first years, they were called Project Rehab Days. There was a whole lot of development going on, bringing in affordable housing into our community. And that was the time when Norb and Tom Denhart became big developers of a lot of our housing. I believe that we were forming what we have known, we've called the Oberon People's Movement. It was a poor people's movement, organizing efforts for basic human rights, not only for decent housing. Obviously, we were the part of creating the drop-in center, putting a roof over people's heads that were experiencing homelessness. But we worked for, organized for safe streets. We worked for planting trees, doing community gardens, building people's programs like here at Peasley. Worked to save schools because we've lost a lot of schools, saving our pools, saving our basketball courts. I looked at my files. I have more files in my history of save this. You know what I mean? So it's like we really wanted to improve our conditions and improve quality of life. And people organized around welfare rights. And the other thing is that we wanted to give people a voice. I mean, this whole democratic process, it's important that people who are suffering an injustice have to have a voice. In all of our community-based groups, we try to involve people. And then one thing we knew from the very beginning, we were vulnerable as tenants because we didn't own our buildings. Our land and buildings were owned by outsiders. So we knew we had to figure out a way to do community-controlled housing. So to me, we were intelligent. We came together and figured out a community approach. We said, we got to be about trying to buy up buildings so that what we feared, this wave of gentrification, when it come, that we would have at least a stake in it and we wouldn't be completely vulnerable. So that was the impetus of us starting a variety of community nonprofits that Mary mentioned, Restock and Over the Rhine Housing Network. And the Over the Rhine Housing Network back then, it was a coalition of housing providers. And when I looked at that list, it is so tough to do affordable housing. I mean, we had groups like Asbury Managers that came out of Wesley Chapel, OTR Inc., St. John's Social Service had FHDI, Sign of the Cross Housing, Tender Mercies, and we came together to talk collectively about how do we get community control of housing. So we strategically wanted to buy buildings in each subsection of our community, which we had identified as five. So it's like we weren't sitting here saying let things just happen. We knew that we wanted to be a part of our future and how we could secure it because we couldn't own it by ourselves. We couldn't own these 3-, 4-, 5-story tenement buildings. We didn't have the money, but we could own them through our neighborhood nonprofits. And then also at that time, we were seeing a lot of demolitions of structurally sound housing. This community would not have the housing it has now without the efforts of our neighborhood people going down weekly to the building department, standing up to try to save buildings, and being willing on Saturdays to go talk to an owner and say, let us help board up your building or put a new roof on. We went down the city to try to get money to put new roofs, knowing that we wanted to save the buildings from the elements. And then also in the 80s, it was our neighborhood that said that we need a comprehensive plan. We went to the city and said, we don't like piecemeal planning. Too many buildings are going down for surface parking lots. Our first African-American city manager was Cy Murray, and we formed the planning task force. We had 19 seats, and 8 of us were neighborhood residents, and it's gone down in history as the 55-20 plan. And that was how many units of housing that persons lived in who were low income then. There were 2,000 vacant units, and we said anybody that wants to come in and develop, you're free to use those units. But we were not going to sell our neighbors down the tubes by getting rid of that housing. But in 1992, a group of Vine Street business owners changed that top priority and said the top priority is mixed income development. always making it look like we weren't supportive of mixed income. But all we were doing is trying to protect the people that lived here. So that was kind of, you know, a loss for us. And then in the 80s, the Reagan years, I think Mary mentioned, the federal budget cuts that we went through. That was the era in which we created the Homeless Coalition, both local, state, and national Homeless Coalition. And then it was the era of the National Historic District. We love our buildings. The facades are beautiful. We knew that. But all the research we did in neighborhoods that were declared historic district before you had any policies or legislation protecting the people, the speculation would happen and displacement would happen. So we worked to try to oppose it for the sheer thing of trying to stall our fear of the gentrification coming here, because we didn't have any policies in place that would protect the people. And our motto was, our faces are more important than facades of buildings. Even though our neighborhood nonprofit low-income groups use historic district tax, things like that, but we had a motive of why we were fighting against historic district at that time. And then the Over the Rhine Comprehensive Plan in 2002, I mean, that passed a year after Timothy Thomas, the civil unrest, was shot. And when we finally worked hard to fix that grid that Jen was talking about, the city decides to abolish its planning department. I mean, it was just a horrible time for us. And not only, we worked for anti-displacement ordinance. We worked in the 80s for a housing retention ordinance, where we would go to city planning commission, and any housing that had low-income people in it within the past 10 years, and someone wanted to get a permit to demolish it, you had to go before a public body, and we got to try to challenge that. And if they ended up getting a permit, they had to pay money, fees, into a housing fund, even though we didn't get as much money as we had hoped to then. So neighborhood people, with some of us not with a lot of education, this didn't mean that we were ignorant. We were down at City Hall constantly trying to get legislation passed so that these kinds of things wouldn't happen. So I just want to say, our neighborhood, the people, the grassroots people, did all kinds of acts of courage over these many years to improve lives of our people. From the drop-in center, the Homeless Coalition, Over the Rhine Community Housing, Peasley. And when I think of all the housing developments that took tenacity and perseverance to see the light of day, the Recovery Hotel, Buddy's Place, Nanny Hinkston House, Sharp Village, Vine Street Community Project, Jimmy Heath House, Beasley Place, Senior Building, Elmo House, Community Views. I mean, when I think of all the work that we've done to do housing, and it hurts me. It's hard to be a resident here, to walk out your door, to see the loss of people that you walked with, that you worked with, that you sang with, that you went to jail with, that you cried with, and that we've lost our people. And we've not only lost that, we've lost hardware stores, our mom and pops, our laundromats, our 25-cent creamy whips, our thrift stores where we bought our clothes, our dishes, our furniture, a drugstore, trees, deep water pools, basketball courts, tot lots, schools, three of them, Peasley, Vine, and Washington Park in this time, community centers like Emmanuel Memorial, loss of social service, the drop-in center building got demolished today. You know, I mean, it's in the Queens Gate. I mean, that whole corner looks so different. We would love to do family affordable housing on that corner if we could just get the support to do that, to honor that legacy of those years that place represented. The loss of public spaces like alleys that are gated, public land that's privatized, low-income people's needs, vital resources like public parks, like that basketball court across from Rothenberg School, because our families don't have the money to go somewhere else. So what we need isn't showing up with all the investment being poured in here. I want to say we lived through the history of this neighborhood declining. Yeah. We did not abandon it. We were living here often with doors not having opportunities, and they were closed to us, but we did not give up. And that's what I want. And then what we've gained right now, and this isn't that I'm against it necessarily, we got a lot of high-end restaurants that our people can't afford. We've got specialty shops where gifts are out of our reach. we've got more liquor licenses to bars we can't afford or frequent. And it's not that we don't want them. It's like, what is not here?
Right.
Where are we going to come together to have this meeting each other across difference? Mm. And it can be a little crazy making because you can feel really powerless. Some days I feel like I'm in a wrestling ring. Mm. There's so much going on, you can't keep track of it. I mean, we went down to a Recreation Commission meeting the other day and didn't realize this subject was going to be on it. So like we're being punched, and you can be bruised. But I just want to remind us about this history that I'm talking about. People organized and wanted to make change and took risks together. And I know that we must persist and participate with other good people wanting to see fairness and development of our neighborhood. And I would say, our history of community-based work should count for something.
It should.
You know what I mean? We've got people that have a lot of expertise. And in that study that Mary sent me, that documented policy link, All in Cities, it says it's critical that they partner with community-based groups that have been doing the work all these years. So I just want to say that we've got to get community control and ownership of housing through inclusionary zoning, through having a fund that has resources that we can use, or there's all other kinds of tools, and that's what we need to do. So we want to say this could be a neighborhood where we all live together, but we want to do it without our people being displaced and not counted for something. Mm.